Everybody, welcome to the Hologram Radio Show. My name is Cheryl Catherine Smith.
I'm Ash Ryan.
And we are Hologram.
We love being Hologram, and we love you listening to Hologram. And that's why I would like to start this show by saying, please look us up on iTunes, because we're super excited. We've been doing a lot of writing, and we don't really come in talking about the music too much, but I've got it in my head. And I'm excited. So, please.
What do you have in your head?
I have fear in my head.
I was thinking that's what you had.
We have a new song called Fear, and it's amazing. Like, I'm so stoked on it.
That's cool, because it's probably in your head radio, hey, Ash?
It's my head radio.
Your head radio? My head radio has Spun Sun in, because that's what our intro was. And that song, Spun Sun of Everyone, it's called Spun Sun, is available on iTunes, and that was written by Ash and I. And, that song is our first song. That was our first release that we had lots of help by Kevin Stewart Swain. Thank you, Kevin. He played on it, and he helped to produce it and engineered it and whatnot. And, we've now got 6 singles out. And thankfully to BBS Radio, I think 3 of our 6 singles are currently being played on a regular rotation on BBS Radio. So I encourage all of you to check out BBS Radio, their music station. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they've got really great independent artists playing you beautiful music while you do whatever you do, while you listen to your internet radio, like you're doing now, listening to us. Today's topic, this is March 25th. We are live, as I said, March 25th. Today's topic is put the text back into texting, dash, and other discussions about literature that inspires our craft. And this topic kind of started out when Ash and I were making comments. I was talking to her about how when we text, we've just short-formed everything, and we're kind of losing our grammar and our English diction and grammar and whatnot, and because we're just we're just trying to expedite everything. And so it's interesting. I always notice when people text your and how incorrectly they do it. Y-O-U apostrophe R-E or Y-R. Y-O-U-R or U-R. It's not Y-R. You're, I guess, Y-R. Do you do Y-R?
No, I see people all the time. It's like Y-R.
Well, I go for the long version. I make sure when I'm saying you are going somewhere, I use the correct form of your, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, for those of you who don't know. I'm being cheeky now. And you're coming to my place. That's another correct way of saying Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. And bring your best dish. That would be Y-O-U-R. And so it's interesting with texting now how we've all just, it's interesting. I will look on Twitter because a lot of times people tweet their texting short forms, and I actually can't understand a lot of it. And I just glaze over and I don't even bother trying to figure it out.
I'd rather see like a short Twitter status with real words than a long one and you're like, what does this code mean?
LOL.
LOL, ROFL,
OMG.
Exactly.
Anyways, we as you know, are artists, and we've actually, I self-identify as being a poet, and we're both definitely songwriters. Ash, I think, is also a poet. She's got really fabulous lyrics, and I don't know if you've ever actually self-identified as a poet. I don't think you have.
Yes, I have actually. Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, a lot of time. Like, that's what I did in high school. I didn't care for anything else. I probably, like, I feel so ashamed because this show's about literature. And I've probably read, I seriously haven't read a lot of books. Like, fully, novels. I've read a lot of poetry books.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you're going to come from the poetry end, and yeah. I'll come from the novel end.
Yeah, I'm not good with novels. I'm just like, what the, like, seriously, it's, I need some poetry in there. I go a little crazy.
Well, I just love literature. As a child, I was enthralled by books. I would isolate a lot as a young girl, say, maybe between the ages of 10 and well into my teens, and I would be in my bedroom, and I'd have my bedroom door shut, and I would be there with a book. And I read from cover to cover, and I mean, when I was younger, I loved the Nancy Drew series, and mm-hmm. I read a bunch of, that sort of pertinent books. I did read books that were, you know, outside of my regular age level as well, but I just loved where fantasy took me, where literature took me.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time just with a book, and that was my company.
That's really cool.
So, did your mom read to you when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. My mom read to me quite a bit. And we.
When you were a little girl, you remember your mom bringing out those How Tony Lost His Tooth on Tuesday books?
Well, I really liked being read to as a child. But I think I enjoyed, like, one of my exes had a child, so I got to do a lot of reading to her.
Oh, cool.
And that was probably one of the most, I really loved to do that.
So I loved reading to, how old every was this night. Little girl?
Well, we were together for about 3 years, so from 5 till she was about 8.
Oh, almost okay, 9. That's a good reading
age. It was a really good reading age. Every night I read to her.
Wow.
So it was really nice.
So did you read her, like, the works of Nietzsche and Rimbaud and
well,
a little,
know,
bit of Plath?
Well, the Plath I found depressed her a little. But I think that she was really into Baudelaire.
Oh, Baudelaire?
You're funny.
Yeah, she loved Baudelaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was reading up on her French.
Yeah, her French
writers and French poets. We are going to talk a little bit about the books and the things that have inspired us. And I also wanted to invite you all to call in and share that work and those works which have made a really big impact in your life, and how important literature is to you in your life as well, whether it be novels or full book or poetry or lyrics, which is why I'm adamant about lyrics to our songs and have always been adamant about the lyrics that I sing where I'm a co-writer or a writer. Because to me, lyrics are really important. I know a lot of people with singer-songwriters, some people will just focus on the music, and sometimes people have this idea that lyrics are just kind of throwaway, but I totally disagree, and that's just because the poet that's in me, that's where my poet comes out. And so for me, music is a vehicle for the poetry a mm-hmm. lot of times. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I really agree, and even lately I've been kind of delving into the when musicians release poetry. Like, I was just, like, looking through that Ani DiFranco poetry
book.
Yeah. Like, I think lyrics are one of the most important things.
I do, too. And I've actually been kind of scoffed at before when I've said that and been raked over the coals for my lyrics.
Well, you know what? I know you have, but what I got to say about that is I've heard people even telling you, or, like, have heard of people saying to you that you're trying to fit too much in.
I've heard that too,
but I've got that too.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying to you is, when you say that you've been scoffed at, I don't think you should, because what you've presented lyrically that I've seen is freaking brilliant, and I understand what you're saying. Whereas a lot of times I hear even, like, rap on the radio, and they're saying too much that you can't even understand the art in there, or, you know, you're hearing people who say too little, and I've had that too. They're like, "Are you saying too much in this?" I said, no. Like, if you're coming from it from a lyrical point of view, and it's really married with the music really well, I think that there's nothing as priceless as that.
Well, the thing about songwriting, and when you're writing lyrics, it's not just you're not just creating a poem and trying to shove it into a musical field. It's it really is marrying the two.
Yeah.
And so a lot of, for those of you who've heard our songs, or, for example, Sucker Number 93, those are lyrics that there's a lot of lyrics in there, but I like the meter, and I like the way it sings. And so even I know the Beatles, they would, you know, the nonsense song, like I Am the Walrus, everything was about how it sang. It wasn't so much about the meaning of the words themselves as it was how it sang, how mm-hmm. it sounded with all the other instruments. For me, it's kind of a combination of both. The words definitely have to have a meaning, and every word I choose is very
deliberate. And I noticed that in you, and that's why I'm saying that to you.
Even the way I spell it, sometimes I'll change the spelling on purpose.
Or make up your own words.
Yeah, make up my own words, but that again, it's just sort of playing, and I feel a little bit like I have the liberty, just like being a trained artist. You know, I can learn as a trained artist to paint a realistic picture. But once I'm allowed to, you know, once I've accomplished that, when I've accomplished the ability to create a realistic picture, then I can go into the abstract and the bizarre like Picasso did. Mm-hmm. He was an amazing painter. If anybody has seen any of Picasso's work prior to his cubism, he was definitely a really great realist painter. Mm-hmm. But what makes him stand out is the abstract nature of the cubism that he's doing. And suddenly he's this, you know, amazing, mm-hmm. revered artist. So the same thing goes with words.
Mm-hmm.
I feel because I've studied words, I've got English literature in university, and I really focused on words and mm-hmm. compositions and writing and on. I like to think that I have the ability and like the license to be a little bit more creative with words and word kind of wordsmithing. I'm like a wordsmith.
That's what I meant when I said that to you, is that I really see the deliberation, like how deliberate a lot of your lyrics are. And I think that it's really clever. I think that it's really, really clever to sit down and listen to lyrics in songs like Spun Sun or something and go, wow.
That's a good example.
That fits so good. I can't imagine anything else being in there. As somebody who notices that sort of thing, I'm commending you because I think that's really great.
Well, thank you. I'm not saying I've been scoffed off all along. I mean, I've also received praise. I was really grateful. I've had people like LA producers and whatnot say that they can see the education in lyrics, which is, you know.
Yeah.
I want to say this, too, that I'd rather read the words of someone that doesn't need to hear what I think of their work. Because when writing becomes a necessity and is sought after as like your breath, like being a creative artist, it's something we have to do. It's like breathing. We can't not create. I know I've done a double negative, but you guys get the idea. We have to create. It's like our breath. And therefore, you know that everything that comes out of us is authentic. But when it's contrived and whatever you're using, whether it's your computer or ink and pen, all of a sudden become utensils for your fashion, what's in fashion or the status that you're searching for, I actually feel kind of sad for those who consume themselves in that delusion, because I feel as creative artists, it's imperative that we just be with it and we allow it to come out like it's like a birth.
Yeah.
And not to say that we can't revise, because I know F. Scott Fitzgerald, for example, he painstakingly revised. And look at The Great Gatsby. I mean, it's a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that we don't revise, but some things actually are birth and they are exactly perfect as they are.
Well, like Jim Morrison said, I like people who shake people up and make them feel uncomfortable. And so I would rather have art that is honest. And by art, I mean literature, because to me, that's what literature is. It's art. So I would rather have the honesty and something that isn't so polished to be that fashion or to be that kind of status, something that's really nitty gritty. I'd rather be reading something like that rather than something just to, you know, like some, like there's a lot of the trends, like I'm going to use this as, some people probably won't even be able to identify this, but I was thinking about this earlier today when I was thinking about the radio show. There are so many bands that are a dime a dozen. And I was thinking this when I was listening to a few bands today going, wow, like look at that, the whole movement that's happening right now, either the, you know, the whole screamo thing. Every band just goes, every single band sounds the same, and it doesn't even matter what the crap you're saying, because it's all about the fashion. Let's wear our tight pants and do your thanks for stealing my hairstyle, people. But all I gotta say is,
how many years ago did you have this hairstyle, Ash?
Like let's say 15.
Okay.
Okay. So you know what? Like I was really thinking about that, and so that what you just said really reminded me of what I was thinking about earlier today.
Cool. So you appreciate as I do.
Originality.
Originality. And that whether we agree with it or not, you know, who was it who said, I may not like what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. That was Voltaire.
Cool.
Okay. So Voltaire hit the nail right on the head. It's not so much that I'm going to love everything I read, or I'm going to love every song I hear, or every lyric I hear. Mm-hmm. But if it comes from that place of this is pure birthing creative, you know, expression,
mm-hmm.
I go, damn right.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn right. Good going, right? And you could feel it. It's like energetically you can feel authenticity and unauthenticity, because I know a lot of times, you know, you go down, for example, to Los Angeles, and we've both been down there and dealt with a lot of people in the music business and whatnot. And oftentimes, you know, they want you to be, for those of you who are American Idol watchers, you'll hear Randy Jackson say this. I've heard him say this before. I actually even saw him down in Los Angeles one year. And it's just about, we want you to be original. We want you to be authentic. But a lot of the times these A&R guys or the record labels get a hold of you as a band.
Yeah.
And they want you to sound like somebody who's currently hot because they're making an investment in you. So even as musical artists, we have to stay so strong and stick to our guns and be who we are. And you may not necessarily dig it or love it, but we can't change it. If it's authentic, it's who we are, and we will find our following. You all will find your following, and you will all find your place. But if you're trying so hard to fit some kind of a mold, mm-hmm. then you're not really even knowing or having a connection to who you are. You're kind mm-hmm. of running, like, it's almost like running in this direction, and then you think, oh God, it's not working, and you pull back and you go in another direction. Oh, that's not working. Or I'll try a new image. Oh, that's not working. Or I'll try a new sound. Oh, that's not working. It's all just about being complete in the center of who you are, and everything coming from that place, be it great or not so great, at least it's all coming from that same place.
Yeah,
and I started to tell you that we were inviting you to call in and let us know your inspirations in terms of literature. You can call in to our toll-free number in U.S. and Canada, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And we welcome your thoughts on the subject of literature and texting, if you want to talk about that too.
Texting, anything, even music, because I really do believe that literature does have its place in music.
Definitely. And you, if for those of you who are well-versed in literature and writers and authors, a lot of times when you listen, for example, listen to our lyrics and you'll see who we're alluding to, because we allude to a lot of different artists and different poets in our music. And I also wanted to make this comment, because I'm really pro women. I'm pro goddess. I'm pro bring the women back into the planet, in terms of we need more women leaders. We need more feminine energy drawn in to balance the overt attention to the patriarchal, to the masculine. And I'm saying this to men too, because you've got women in, you've got femininity within you. So this isn't just about women power. We're going to, you know, stomp all over you. Ha ha ha. This is, we need to embrace the feminine in each of us. And that means women as well as men. And so that being said, one of the biggest things for me in university, I did take English literature as one of my majors, and I was falling in love with the female artists, the writers from the Victorian age, because they were speaking, as we're talking now, they were speaking very, very overtly, but they were using fiction. Because they didn't have the ability at that time, because people weren't open-minded. They were so prone to censorship, and they were prone to basically being, probably wouldn't have sold anything if they had spoken mm-hmm. their mind very openly.
Yeah.
So they would, people like the Bronte sisters, and then first Jane Austen, and then the Bronte sisters came in after her, were talking very specifically about women's roles and how women relate to men and marriage. There was a real focus on marriage and romantic love and the acquisition of a husband and women's place in society and the caste system and all that. I mean, these are British artists. or I mean British art authors. So they're going to be focused on the caste system, which is very British and still is very British, by the way. It's still very much a part of Britain, is this caste system, although it's not as overt at this point. But I loved reading their works because here were women. I mean, initially, the Bronte sisters, for example, they started the first one. Charlotte was born in 1816, and then her two sisters, Emily and Anne, followed. But in that time, they even couldn't originally publish under their feminine names, their real names, because they were women.
Yeah.
So I also want to kind of do a big nod to the progression of females in literature, because, you know, ever since Aristotle, we've been really, and Chaucer, we've been really focused on men as writers. And even in the Bible, there's not, do you see one?
Yeah.
One woman in the Bible?
Not for books, no.
No, right?
Wow, so I never
think
thought,
about
I
that.
Never thought of that.
So, I mean, there really has been a huge hole in literature in terms of the feminine perspective. And, I mean, we know that there's the Magdalene Gospel, the Gospel of Magdalene that was discovered not that long ago, was never put as part of the Bible. There's all sorts of different works that were supposed to be or supposedly contributed to the Bible and never were. We have Constantine, who was doing, you know, the Council of Nicaea and all that, and who was deciding what should be in the Bible and what shouldn't. And that's a whole other show. But I just really wanted to touch on women and the lack of women in literature, and commend people like the Bronte sisters, Jane Austen, for using fiction so pertinently to say something, to make a comment about a social condition.
Well, you know what? It's totally not in literature. But I think that what could rival that, one of the most important things for me, something else I was thinking about, and you and I talked about it actually probably a month ago, one of the most important things I think that a female has done in a long time is Sinead O'Connor.
Yay!
And I think that one of the most important things that may as well be considered literature, because I think it has, what she did probably has more power to me than a religious book, when she was on Saturday Night Live. And I think that video has been kind of circulating a lot more lately, and I think there's a reason for that. I think that what she did as a female standing up to, like, see, I don't even think it would have been as shocking if it was a man doing that. If it was a man ripping up a picture of a pope, it would not have been as shocking. It would have been just considered, I think, like, oh, that's just stupid that, you know, somebody would do that. Like, oh, let's boycott his show, whatever. But Sinead was, because she was a woman, because she was standing up, it reminds me of what you're saying about all these women. That, you know, they're coming out of the closets, you know, so to speak, and not about their sexuality, but about, you know, their art or what they feel or what they think.
Their true thoughts.
Their true thoughts. And I think that's exactly what needed to happen when it happened. And, that to me is really powerful, and if you look it up on YouTube, listen to the words, because I think that poem, that song that she basically sang is one of the most powerful pieces of literature I've seen.
Yeah, so you can find that on YouTube, Sinead O'Connor, SNL, Pope, rip up picture.
So that was amazing. That was amazing.
Well, I actually remember the when it was live.
I don't remember what year it was. So was I, but I probably didn't understand.
It was in the 90s. And yeah. And I remember I was that whole studio audience was just silent, dead silent.
Silence.
You could hear a pin drop. And I remember the power of that. And I remember I'm getting goosebumps even now talking about it, because I remember how I felt at that time. I was just so with her.
Yeah.
And you know, the unfortunate thing is as a result of it, because I mean she's taken on the whole Catholic church and all Catholics. I mean, people got offended very quickly by it. They didn't really delve into the whys and the wherefores and sort of understand what the meaning was. They just, a lot of people sort of jumped on making an assumption about it, seeing it, sort of taking it at a face value that seemed destructive, when
blasphemous,
in fact,
yeah.
And it wasn't blasphemous. In fact, it's about taking our power back. It's about It's about not becoming second to anyone or anything. It's really just acknowledging the power and the beauty of each individual, and not anyone being any closer to God or whatever you choose to call God.
The Pope scares me for some reason, and I mean that, like, I don't care if I'm quoted on this or whatever, but the Pope really does scare me. So, like, yeah, there's such a negative energy around the Pope that it scares me. It scares me to think that, like, he's on TV and then I just imagine him, like, beheading babies later. Like, that's...
that's a little extreme.
You're scared to me. That's...
Never mind, Sinead. You're talking about beheading babies. It's not even ripping up a picture.
Yeah, but that's what I'm scared. Like, that's the kind of energy I get. Like, there's something so dark and unseen that I understand. And I think that's what we need to start writing about. Not beheading babies, but just letting that side out.
Exposing. Well, it's all about exposure. It's all about, you know, seeing things for what they truly are, as opposed to what we're either told they are or that we would like them to be. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a great deal of courage to look at anything and everything to do with our living on this planet and our experience of life, and and look at everything for what it is, as opposed to kind of sugarcoating it. And again, that reminds me of the Matrix movie with, you know, do you take the blue pill or the red pill?
Yeah.
And that's essentially what we're talking about here is, you know, literature can kind of funnel us in a really great direction.
Mm-hmm.
Sinead is also a writer. She's not just, you know, she's a writer, yeah. She's a performer, she's a singer. She's also a priest. And she's become a priest since that occurrence on Saturday Night Live. And it's interesting how her life path has kind of gone. And, you know, people shunned her because of her voice. And I think of so many fantastic, brilliant, amazing minds and artists who have been shunned. And many of them actually died in a place of feeling probably like they were nothing and nobody and had made no impact, you know, dying in sadness and despair, only to, you know, if they would have been able to stick around and see what happens as a result of their work and their impact. You know, a lot of times the turnaround is just takes longer than even the artist's lifetime. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for it to sort of come back to being recognized as the great work that it was or is and still is.
Well, I mean, it could just be said like that for musicians, too. Even, you know, when you and I have gone to the EMP Museum.
In Seattle, everybody.
And you see how many people, like you see in that room, in the Nirvana exhibit, they actually have a Nirvana exhibit there. And you go in this little cinema and you hear people who've recorded in this little booth, it's like Speaker's Corner, what Nirvana meant to them. And thinking, holy shit, look at what, like 20 years later, how relevant that is, and how much more important it is now because we realize what we had.
Well, do you think, I mean, this is a whole different argument. We realize what we had. Is that because Kurt passed away almost 18 years ago now, actually next month? Or is it because it was always great?
Well, it's because it was always great, but also I think people wanting to go back and actually live in that movement.
Yeah, when you're there, oftentimes, you know, when you're in your life, you think about this, everybody, you think about your own lifetime experience, and if you kind of reminisce and you look back to some of the greatest points, I'll call them perfect moments, like Spalding Gray talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You look at some of these greatest points in your life, and oftentimes you'll remember that you weren't even really aware of how great they were in the moment were occurring. But when you, in hindsight, you can look back and go, holy, holy, like you said, holy shit.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
That was an amazing time of my life. I had no clue. I can see now the beauty of it, the majesty of it, the miracle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, wasn't that something? So this is why I think it's so important. I keep reminding myself, live in my moments, and each moment is miraculous. And I may not even grasp that in the moment that I'm living it, but it is.
Staying present is really important.
And, you know, getting back to literature, I wanted to quote a Rimbaud quote because this is very pertinent to what we're discussing right now. And here it is. And again, no more gods, no more gods. Man is king, man is God, but the great faith is love.
That's amazing.
Now, we're talking about love as hologram, aren't we? We talk, this is sort of our mantra, our mantra, and our vision is bring love back. I know that John Lennon and Yoko were all pro-peace. You know, they talked about giving peace a chance. And Hologram integrates peace in saying, let's just all, you know, focus on love. Because if we're focused in love and on love, peace naturally will happen. Mm-hmm. Right? That's so true. It's kind of like the umbrella of all of the other beautiful attributes, harmony, peace.
Yeah.
You know, peace of mind, a sense of purpose, a sense of well-being. Right? It all kind of offers the umbrella. Rambo also said, I believe that I am in hell, therefore I am there. And isn't it interesting that he spoke about this how long ago, and now we have this sort of new age movement that talks about your thoughts or
like your manifest. Secret. Like, how many millions and millions of dollars did The Secret make?
So here we are. I mean, you know, great literature, great minds. And I've said this before and I'll keep saying it. And this is why I quote so much on my Facebook and on my Twitter is I just like people to recognize that great minds have already thought of most of what we're already experiencing. And we think that we're so brilliant and that we're coming up with new concepts, but we're not. They're just old concepts, old wisdom, mm-hmm. old sage words that are being reinvented with kind of like a new outfit.
Exactly.
Yeah, give it a new outfit, put a new spin on it. But we need to recognize again, like the beauty of literature. Without literature, where would we be? I mean, we have the oral tradition, which basically mankind started out with the oral tradition. Everything was handed down orally. They didn't know how to write. Most people weren't literate. And so everything was orally passed down. But then we had the gift of writing and being literate and writing things down. And this is why we do have the Bible, which is 2,000 years old, because people were able to write it down. So we can actually read it. You know, 2,000 years later, exactly how it was written. It's not an oral tradition that has sort of changed throughout the retelling of the story. It's something that we can read exactly as it was meant to be. And I also want to say that really literature, I totally agree with this, that literature, there's nothing short of real life itself that bestows and reacts like reality other than literature, because movies are, you know, pretty rich in their pictures and the evidence of, they basically kind of set the scene and you can't really change or alter a movie. You see it as it is and you have the experience of it. Music is also a bit one-dimensional, but literature sets a time and a place and offers you the chance to decorate your own canvas. So you can kind of become your own director in your own movie. So you can have a book that's given to you, and when the author has written, he or she has set down a scene, and in their mind they're able to create it and mm-hmm. put it on paper. But when it comes to us, we take our own canvas,
spin on it.
And we become our own god in a way, because we create a new reality. And that's why it's almost like entering a whole other dimension when you're actually in a book. Have you ever read something And you've ended it, and you never wanted it to stop?
Well, yeah, that too. Like, either not wanting it to stop and just being like, oh, I want to go back and live there in a way, like live in my head. Or what's worse, let me tell you something that's worse, okay?
What?
When you read a book and go, wow, that is just amazing. I love everything that I've kind of lived through with this book. I've made all this up in my head because of this amazing portrayal. And then it's made into a movie. And everything that you've had in your head, all of a sudden the characters look different, all of a sudden their room looks different, the setting looks different, and you're just, it's ruined.
Well, it's ruined for you, but the director whose vision has now, you know, put it onto the screen, he's taken, you know, the words and made his own. He's showing you his vision.
True, but then you can't help.
Or
but,
her.
Yeah, you can't, there you go. You can't help, but kind of integrate that into what you've also thought, because it's so the similarity, like, you know, I don't know.
And thus begins the argument. Did you like the book or the movie better?
I usually like the book better, unless in school I cheated and watched the movie.
Or you did the Cole's note thing.
You know, the Cliff's notes?
Yeah, Cole's notes.
I never Cliff really notes. Did that. I did more like, we had to do this thing in school where we had to read. I like to read later on, people. But we had to do this thing where it was, you got to pick from a list of like hundreds of books, and there were tests on the computer about them. And so I always would look down the list for ones that were movies. And then I'd watch, and then I found out later that they specifically picked things from those that are definitely in the book.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that the movie often is not like the book at all. Yeah. I mean, you have to think about it. You've got a book that has, say, 400 pages, and you try to put 400 pages of writing into, you know, 90 minutes of cinematic expression, and you're basically ending up with
100
pages.
I found that out
condensed.
The hard way, yes.
Once again, we're just going to invite you to call in if you're interested in talking about literature and the effect that it's made on your life.
Yeah, tell us what it means to you. Tell us what you would do without literature. Tell us how it's got you through times. Just talk about it with us. Call if you feel inclined, or just keep listening to us, because it's fun. Anyway, the call-in number is for you. Toll free, 888-627-6008, and that's in U.S. and Canada. So again, 888-627-6008. Even tell us some writers you like, some lyricists that are just rocking your world right now or that have in the past. We are open to hearing from you.
Definitely, and you know, in the meantime, we have no problem just chatting on ourselves, do we?
That's what we like to do.
Because we like to hear the sound of our own voices.
If the computer wasn't on right now, this would still be happening. If we were not on the radio, this is probably
that's
what we'd
true.
Be talking.
We have some really good conversations. That's agree. We don't just put this on just for the show.
No. Sometimes we talk too much.
So then instead we should just pick up a book and read it.
I don't think so. We read. We read when we're together, too. When we hang out, we read.
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of reading. But you know what I found lately is I used to, you know, read cover to cover. But now I'm more prone to kind of flipping open a book and reading a page or two or ten.
Or like kind of the divination. Like
yeah, exactly.
What
do I need right now?
And then like seeing what you were meant to see.
Yeah, what do I need to read right now? I wanted to mention, too, the importance in my life. We're talking about our own personal lives. But the importance of my life has always been biography and autobiography. And just so people recognize what I didn't recognize, but now I do, thanks to my third year professor, I took a biography course, and she pointed out to all of us at the very first day, she said, what do you think biography is, folks? Do you think biography is fiction or nonfiction? And most of us are going, well, of course it's nonfiction. It's biography. You're writing about your life. You're writing, you know, places and facts and dates and times and, you know, feelings and experiences. And she said, well, no, you're incorrect. Biography is fiction. And the more I thought about it, this is interesting, too. For those of you who are doing or working on your memoirs right now, think about when you're writing and you're putting yourself in the past and you're putting yourself in situations, and it's always one-dimensional because our lives are lived by us. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, one certain experience would be completely written differently by another person who was in the same room, for example. Now, mm-hmm. Ash and I had an experience on the last week, which was pretty heavy duty. We were
heavy duty.
So this is my example here, because Ash and I were in this experience with six other people, and they were strangers to us. So we walked into a subway, and as we're walking into the subway, there's a subway, two people behind the subway counter, a young man and a young woman. There's an older woman standing in front of the counter, and there's a younger girl standing with her. I think there also was two other people in the restaurant at the time, but I didn't really pay attention to them. You noticed them. I didn't. But as we're walking into the subway, we see this man beating a young boy on the head with his fists, repeatedly shoving him out of the subway and through the door. I mean, these are not light doors. These are heavy glass doors, literally pushing him, shoving him, and punching him in the head as he's pushing him through the door and grabbing him by the scruff of the neck and dragging him, almost dragging him pretty much, to the truck, throwing him in a truck. Now, this was extremely upsetting to Ash and I, and we did follow up on it. And for those of you who know our Facebook and our Twitter, you know that we have followed up on it, and including 911 calls. We've called social services, and we also talked to deputies. So we've done what we feel is our service to our community and keeping all of us safe. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because if I were to write about that situation, and that is my life, right? It's my biography. I put it in the Cheryl Catherine Smith memoirs the day I went into Subway and I saw this horrific child abuse happen. And if Ash was to write about the same situation, and we were to compare, I mean, there would be some similarities, but it would be very different, wouldn't it? Because it's also our emotions become involved.
Well, yes, the emotion.
And if you take the woman, the young girl behind the counter of the subway, and she wrote about it, that would be a whole different thing, too.
Well, exactly. And
so, fiction or nonfiction?
There was also another guy that came through in there that, that I guess, saw something but didn't do anything. An older, I think he was an Asian guy.
Oh, really? Oh, that was the manager.
Okay.
That's a whole other thing. We'll talk about that
later.
Yeah,
but anyway,
but
I just want to say.
This is for the purpose of literature.
But exactly, like, because of the emotions getting in there, like, even the people behind the counter, how they kind of did nothing, they kind of just, what I think that they'd kind of say if they were writing it is, oh, yeah, it was just really bizarre. This guy just kind of hurt. And for me, I'm just, like, beside myself, unknowing how somebody could be doing that. It's just, oh my God, I could say for hours. I could talk about it for hours.
But it's also about our vantage point, because Ash and I were walking in and we saw it right in front of us. The people behind the counter couldn't see him push this young boy through the door because the door was blocked from their view from the counter. So again, when we're writing about our lives, it's about our emotional approach to it. It's about our vantage point. It's about our state of mind. So think about that, folks. When you're writing your memoirs, you're writing your autobiography, your biography, think about what it is when you're trying to express something. I mean, I am such a person who likes to be all about truth and being dead on right and being honest and writing the facts and on and on. But in reality, I can do the best of my ability in writing my biography, but it still is going to be considered a work of fiction.
Well, exactly it is. And it almost makes you grateful sometimes even after you're done writing, even if it was a traumatic experience that you went through that. And I mean, even us, we walked in at the exact, not even a few seconds after we walk in does this happen. We walked in at the right time.
Well, we have a caller, and I believe this is Ryan from Canada on line 3.
Hey.
Hi, Ryan from Canada.
How are you doing, Ryan?
Hi. Good. How are you?
We're good. So congratulations. We're sorry we missed your dinner, but you're in our thoughts, and we're happy for you. And what kind of literature discussion would you like to have with us?
Pretty much up for talking about anything, but I wanted to just quickly touch on a couple of books. They were two books that I actually read. As you know, I'm in recovery. When I was in detox, there are two books I read, and one was Angela's Ashes, and the other one was Man's Search for Meaning. I don't know if you've read either one of those. Angela's Ashes is by Frank McCourt. He's an Irish author. And then Man's Search for Meaning was by Viktor Frankl, who was a doctor, a psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust. And just reading about their experiences, because Frank McCourt with Angela's Ashes, he wrote about his childhood. And just reading about their survival and their spirits, that they were somehow able to, you know, they both of these people they overcame the odds and pulled through just horrendous times, you know, like true thrivers, right? And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've read those books, but they spoke pretty loudly to me. I think, I mean, like, I'm very picky about what I read. Like, I don't read a whole lot, but I do read some things. And, but yeah, it's, and then I like reading some poetry, like Leonard Cohen. You know, he writes, he sings, he does a little bit of everything. He's an artist. I think these, you know, just people like that, they kind of branch out into every kind of, as many mediums of art as they can, you know, writing and music and stuff. I don't think there's a such thing as having too much on your plate, quote unquote, as you referenced earlier, Cheryl, you know, people have said that you kind of have had a lot going on in terms of that. I don't think you can really have too much going on when, you know, it comes to expressing yourself through art or writing, you know, like Am I making sense?
I think you are.
No, you're making a lot of sense. I wanted to address
I'm what you said. I'm tired today, so.
You know what? I wanted to address what you said about why those books meant a lot to you. And I think that when we can see how resilient the spirit can be, it's really inspiring rather than seeing somebody, oh yeah, you won a race, that's awesome, I'm going to train so I can run that race, great. But when you see somebody really overcome something that almost seems unbearable, and, you know, yeah, with flying colors, with not even, you know, with being able to discuss how painful it was, but grow from it and not remain a victim, that's amazing. When you can come out of it with a piece of literature or a song, that to me is what we live for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's got a story. Definitely everyone's got a story. And I think everybody should read a book about someone that has had it worse than them. Like, because I don't care who you are or how bad you've had it, there was always somebody out there who's got it worse, who's put it out there, you know, and that you can get so much strength from that. You know, so yeah, I think literature is awesome. It definitely serves a huge purpose. You know, and of course, then there's people out there who put a book for the sake of putting a book out there. Like I said, I'm pretty picky about what I read, but yeah, it's, as long as it's about strength, then like, I'm always happy to read it. So
it's not a time waster, right? Because time is really precious, and when we read something that offers us inspiration and we feel connected to a life, to me, that's beautiful. And that's how I feel what you're sharing about the literature experiences you've had that's important to you is that sense of not only connection, but also like a triumph, and it's like you're just rejoicing with that, with the writer, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So
cool. Well, thank you so much, and we know you're tired because you've just been partying hard.
Well, you know, that's soda water and lime cordial.
And you've been playing the drums, too, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm tired today from that. I was out playing earlier, so, yeah.
And I heard that you were learning our song called The Fusion.
Yes, I've been working on that, so, I finally got some more fills in, so it's a great song. It's a great song. I love it. So
thank you. Yeah. Well, we'll have to jam it out with you, Ryan. And it's so cool that you're learning how to play it on drums. That's really, really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, it would be great to do that. So
okay. Well, you know, maybe you can join Hologram when you're not doing your Ryan project.
Yeah. Exactly.
It'd be an honor.
That's so awesome.
Thanks for calling in, and we'll definitely stay in touch, okay, because we got to do the pancake thing soon.
Absolutely.
All right, much love to you, Ryan. Thank you.
Have a good one, dude. Thanks for calling in. We love you.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye. Hey, we have another caller, and this is really funny. We've got Janice from Upstairs, Canada.
Upstairs, Canada?
That's right.
I've always wanted to go there. I've wanted to go there for a long time. You got to go.
Well, Janice from Upstairs is on line four. Hi, Janice.
Hello, Janice. Are you there? Yes, can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay. This is so weird because I was upstairs. And I was listening to your radio show while Ryan was talking, and I had something on. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I was listening to Ryan talking, and I had something on my computer that I got onto my computer that I wanted to read to you, and then Ryan started to talk, and this is so weird because it's Leonard Cohen.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's... Yeah, and like he's one of my absolute favorites, and he wrote this one called One of Us Cannot Be Wrong, a song.
Yeah.
And if I can just read you a paragraph of it, and it's just so poetic, and it's just, I mean, when he tells a story, it's in color. And let's see, it's called One of Us Cannot Be Wrong. I lit a thin green candle to to make you jealous of me, but the room just filled up with mosquitoes. They heard that my body was free. Then I took the dust of a long sleepless night and I put it in your little shoe. And then I confessed that I tortured the dress that you wore for the world to look through. Like, isn't that something? Like, it's just,
that's amazing.
It's so descriptive, but it's got color to it, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and it's
sometimes
also
people write stuff. Yeah.
It's cryptic,
and I have
but
this
it's
online.
Not. Well,
pardon
so
me?
So, what I said, Janice, is it's cryptic, but it's not. Like, it's a brilliant piece of writing.
Yes, it is. It's so beautiful. Like, Leonard Cohen he is my favorite, my absolute favorite. And this one song, One of Us Cannot Be Wrong, has been my favorite for, I don't know, maybe 30 years or more, that this song and how... You know, how it starts with "I lit a thin green candle to make you jealous of me," and then after that, it just kind of flows. So I just wanted to let you know that poetry is just, you know, when it's somebody that has something to say and they can say it with a color to it, you know, not just an emotion but a color as well.
Yeah,
like it's like the whole thing. It just creates the whole scene.
Well,
and,
you know what? You know what? Even there's one line that just got me lately, and I was on the Doors app on the iPhone. This one, I just can't get it out of my head. This one line that Jim Morrison wrote is "Newborn awakening with ravaged limbs and wet souls."
That's
very
similar.
Isn't that cool? It reminds me of that.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that ability
and
go ahead.
You know, how one little phrase can stay in your head for me for over 30 years. Just that one line. Like, it just touched me so many years ago, and I used to listen to Leonard Cohen all the time. But that one line has just stayed with me. Like, you know, well, actually, that first verse, you know, how the room filled up with my mosquitoes because they heard my body was free. Like, you know, the agony that he's feeling all the way through this song is just, you know, and then at the end of the song, there's like wailing, like a crying. Somebody's wailing in at the end of the song, like to the music. Like, it's just incredible.
Wow.
So, you know, how something like that can touch you to leave an impression for so many years, and there you go, it's literature. Literature turned into a song. Poetry turned into a song.
He's a good example.
I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you, Janice. Thank you for how.
You're
what's
welcome.
It like in upstairs Canada?
Yeah, what's upstairs Canada like?
Well, there's a smell of lasagna that Cheryl made that's just incredible, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you have been to upstairs Canada. You lie.
I never said I hadn't been there.
Oh.
I did.
And leftover hot dogs.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay, love you guys.
Love you too.
Your show.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Well, that's beautiful. I mean, we've talked about writers, authors, we've talked about poets. Leonard Cohen, fabulous Canadian poet.
He's amazing.
Jim Morrison, another fabulous poet,
He's
American.
He's been inspiring me so much lately.
That's cool.
Jim Morrison is kicking my ass right now.
That's really cool.
I love him.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time. I didn't like The Doors at all. And now I can't think of a better poet than Jim.
And then we have Rimbaud. We've talked about Rimbaud, you know, French, fabulous French poet. And I mean, I have so many writers that have influenced my life and have been a part of my writing and my lyrical writing. And I mean, I've got Virginia Woolf, Sylvia Plath, Anais Nin, Henry Miller. I've already mentioned Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, D.H. Lawrence, and it could go on and on and on. A lot of classic writers have, Aristotle even. I just, you know, a lot of classic writers have affected me and my way of looking and experiencing the world. And to them, I am honored that they have left such great pieces of work behind that I can connect with, that I can be enriched by. and that I can share, and which I will continue to share on my Facebook and Twitter.
Well, that's I love every day, even like when I don't see you or talk to you, I'm like, I know that she's going to tell me something through the writers. And isn't it great that there's just something, it's almost like the Underground Railroad. You can just, people are going to keep producing this stuff, and you're going to keep connecting to it. I mean, I would not have picked up a guitar, written a lyric, anything, if it wasn't for Ani DeFranco.
Well, that's beautiful.
So, you know, so that's there you
are,
why.
See? So a lot of us artists are artists because of other artists. So yeah. Let's just keep sharing. Let's keep just
share, people.
Share. And I just want to end with this quote, Friedrich Nietzsche. Is not life 100 times too short for us to bore ourselves?
Nietzsche rules.
So grab yourself a book, grab yourself a song, listen to the lyrics. And in that, I'd like to end our show with our song Spun Sun. But before we do, I want to let you know that our next show is April 8th, and it is entitled VV equals the value of volunteering and Value Village. For those of you who like to thrift shop, we're going to be talking about volunteering and thrift shopping. Don't we have the most interesting topics? Anyways, we have been talking about literature. We talked about Spun Sun and the lyrics in Spun Sun. We invite you to listen closely to the lyrics of Spun Sun. Everything is crafted specifically for one particular reason, is to bring an idea and a feeling and an experience across. Thank you. We love you. Enjoy our song, Spun Sun, and join us on April 8th for our next show.
Kiss a tree.
Kiss a tree. Bye.
Bye.
From the Spun Sun.